Hi, this is John Williams from WGN Radio. And when you go to vote in November, if you have not already, you will see to the left of where you can vote for president a ballot question about amending the Constitution to change the state's income tax structure to allow for a graduated state income tax system in which higher incomes can be taxed at a greater percentage than lower incomes. Proponents call it the Fair Tax Amendment. Opponents call it the Tax Hike Amendment. Joining us are Eric Zorn, the Tribune columnist, who joins us regularly on The Mincing Rascals. Hi, Eric.
Hey, John.
Austin Berg is here, too, the Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute. Hi, Austin.
Hello. Did you receive my drug test? I left it on your patio.
I insisted on it before the debate. I wanted a drug test from Austin.
Yeah, needless to say, they did not shake hands and they are not wearing masks for this very special edition of the Mincing Rascals podcast. I'm going to ask you guys to make opening remarks and then we'll kick around this thing, which we really haven't spent a lot of time on the Mincing Rascals podcast, but we're carving out a little time for a special podcast here on this one subject with the pro and con of you. I have my ballot in front of me because I get to vote by mail. I'm going to read you what it says. The proposed amendment grants the state authority to impose higher income tax rates on higher income levels, which is how the federal government and a majority of other states do it. The amendment would remove the portion of the revenue article of the Illinois Constitution that is sometimes referred to as the flat tax that requires all taxes on income to be at the same rate. The amendment does not itself change tax rates. It gives the state the ability to impose higher income tax rates on those with higher income levels and lower income tax rates on those with middle or lower income levels. You are asked to decide whether the proposed amendment should become part of the Illinois Constitution. Eric, why don't you start, give us an opening statement. Austin, you'll follow up and then we'll kick it around. Go.
Thanks, John. There's a good reason why the federal government has imposed graduated income tax rates for more than 100 years and that 32 states do the same. It works. Taxing higher incomes at higher rates than lower incomes shifts the burden of funding government services onto those who are better able to absorb the loss, those who won't have to skip rent, car, or tuition payments in order to pay their taxes. In that way, so-called progressive taxation shrinks at least slightly the income gap between the average wage earner and the wealthy, resulting in a more equal and more stable society. Now, I avoid the term fair tax because fairness is an incendiary and highly debatable concept that distracts us from the central question of which tax structure inflicts the least pain on society while still assuring that we all share in the burden. My answer, the answer from the IRS and from governments in 32 states, is a structure in which the rich pay a greater percentage of their income in taxes than the poor. This helps balance out the greater impact of other taxes and fees paid by lower earners that causes those on the bottom to pay nearly twice the effective state and local tax rate as the top 1%. So I prefer to call it the better tax. High earners tend not to like it. Ken Griffin, who is reportedly the richest man in Illinois, has given $20 million to the campaign to fight the referendum, which is projected to increase state revenues by about $3 billion a year. Just this week, the Civic Committee of the Commercial Club of Chicago, a group of top regional business executives, came out against the proposal. Their reasons are not persuasive. They say Illinois' politicians are corrupt free spenders, and unless they root out graft, cut spending, slash pensions, reduce workers' compensation, and stop gerrymandering, we shouldn't give them any more tax money. Now, this is just hostage taking. Not only does it make the perfect the enemy of the good, but we all know that if the General Assembly met all these demands, the opponents would still find reasons to be opposed to the better tax. Because they also say that this change is just a Trojan horse to raise taxes on the middle class. So the current proposal hikes rates on the 3% of the population that earns more than $250,000, while everyone below that will pay basically the same flat rate of nearly 5% that they're paying now. Dividing the population up into tax brackets, they say, will make it easier for politicians to vote to raise segment by segment instead of all at once, as they must do now. This slippery slope scare theory is not grounded in the reality that it's never easy for lawmakers to raise taxes on middle-income earners. Studies show that states with graduated rates are actually more likely to cut taxes on average wage earners than to raise them. Opponents say a graduated system will drive business owners and affluent residents out of the state, taking their tax dollars with them. And sure, some wealthy people will leave. But if we don't take steps to get our state's fiscal house in order so we can make Illinois an attractive place to live, raise a family, and run a business, people of all income levels will leave. The better tax won't accomplish that on its own, of course. $3 billion more will be just a down payment on a good start toward making sure Illinois will have the solid infrastructure, the educational opportunities, the health care and human services, and the public safety institutions that increase the quality of life. The pandemic has made this change even more urgent. Governments at all levels are seeing lower tax revenues due to the economic slowdown that's increased the need for supporting struggling citizens. Gripe about our scheming politicians all you want. Decades of bipartisan dysfunction, mismanagement, and cynical deal-making have aggravated every problem we have. There's no argument from me there. But we're facing a massive budget shortfall that the state can't just cut or reform its way out of. The alternative to the better tax is likely to be an across-the-board increase in everyone's taxes of 20%. That's not a threat. That's just math. Those who are still doing well can and should shoulder a slightly greater burden, their greater share of the burden than they're now shouldering. Whether or not that's fair, it's better.
That's Eric Zorn from the Tribune. Austin Berg, your turn from the Illinois Policy Institute.
Randy Miles runs the beloved Village Inn Pizzeria in Skokie. Every morning he faces what's been lost along Lincoln Avenue. A studio across the street, he's closed, out of business. The flower shop next door, closed down, out of business. The Subway store that was supposed to reopen after a fire, they're done and out of business, he said. You know, I can probably name 10 places within walking distance that are not going to reopen, Miles said. For millions of Illinoisans like Miles, life in Illinois has never been more uncertain. Making matters worse is the progressive tax ballot question facing voters November 3rd. If you've turned on a television in the past month, you've likely seen a call to vote for the, quote, fair tax. But Illinoisans will have trouble finding, quote, fair on the ballot. The word fair isn't in the plain language of the constitutional amendment that's up for a vote. It's not in the brief summary of the amendment either. That's because what Illinoisans will decide has nothing to do with fairness. The vote is a referendum on power. Specifically, should Springfield have the power to tax Illinoisans, every one of us, in new ways and at higher rates? That includes the power to create a new tax bracket on retirement income, and the power to hike taxes on 100,000 small businesses immediately as they struggle to climb out of the most severe economic downturn since the Great Depression. Progressive tax supporters, such as House Speaker Mike Madigan, say they just want more power to soak the rich. They point to the introductory progressive tax rates passed in Springfield, which would only hike taxes on Illinois households making $250,000 or more. But those rates aren't in the amendment. They're a political promise. Like the political promise that lottery money would go to schools, or that Illinois toll roads would be temporary, or that the 1989 income tax hike would be temporary, or that the 2011 income tax hike would fix the state's debt problem, or that the 2017 tax hike would put an end to two decades of unbalanced budgets, or that the 2019 Property Tax Relief Task Force would give homeowners a break. See a pattern? None of those promises were kept. Trading new taxing power for a political promise is a bad idea for Illinois' middle class, small businesses, and retirees. And after a yes vote, there's no turning back. Look at Connecticut, the only state in the last 30 years to switch from a flat to a progressive tax. In 1996, state lawmakers promised it would ease property tax bills and provide tax relief for the middle class. No luck. Since then, property taxes are up 35% and middle class income taxes are up 13%. And it's not just Connecticut. In most states with a progressive income tax, 18 out of the 32, the middle class pays the highest possible tax rate. State lawmakers zero in on the middle class because they offer the most taxable income. Why do progressive taxes make that a likelihood? For the same reason that when you're watching a horror movie, you plead for the group to stick together. Separation makes you vulnerable, and progressive tax regimes allow for separation. Case in point, all 32 progressive tax states tax some form of retirement income. Retirement income is currently exempt from state taxes in Illinois. Illinois State Treasurer Michael Frerich said this summer that a progressive tax would, quote, make clear that Illinois lawmakers can pass a graduated tax on retirement income. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Daniel Biss said he would only consider a retirement tax if a progressive tax passed first. No retiree should vote for a tax plan that opens up their nest egg to Springfield. But if they only listened to the TV ads, it would be tough to blame some Illinoisans for believing the fair tax hype. One claim: healthcare workers, grocery store clerks, and other working Illinoisans pay the same income tax rate as millionaires and billionaires. One problem? That's not true. In Illinois, the top 20% of earners already pay double the effective income tax rate of the bottom 20%. That's because of exemptions and deductions already on the books. Claims for relief under the fair tax are a slap in the face to low-income residents who would continue to pay the third highest state and local tax bill in the nation if the progressive tax passes. An Illinoisan making $12,400 a year would see a whopping $6 in income tax relief under the proposed progressive tax rates. That would be enough to buy a bag of peanuts if she hadn't already stomached the $100 gas tax hike and $50 vehicle sticker hike imposed by Pritzker last year. If that wasn't bad enough for working Illinoisans, the fair tax plan pours salt in the state's job engine by raising the tax burden as much as 47% on roughly 100,000 small business owners. Quote, "The taxes in Illinois are prohibitive already," Miles said. "Due to taxes, it is next to impossible to make an honest living in my industry." Fair isn't on the ballot this year. Tax hikes are. Stick together, vote no.
Okay, I got a million questions for both of you, but Eric, you were a good boy. You didn't interrupt him. You didn't call him any names.
You muted me, John. I was interrupting him the entire time. You had the kill switch on your microphone.
I did not. You were well behaved.
They really ought to do that. But we'll talk about the debate. We'll talk about the presidential debate tomorrow. Yeah, I see a lot of backwards looking in this objections to the Better Tax Amendment, because they're saying that, well, you can't trust politicians in Illinois. And I agree with that. But you have to look at the record nationally, which is that states with graduated income tax rates don't tend to raise them on the middle class. They're much more likely to raise them on upper income earners than middle income earners. Most of the time, they don't raise the rates at all. So the idea that this is just a foot in the door, a Trojan horse, isn't borne out by the national studies. Now, and of course, the other problem is that when you look at, as I said, when you look at the objections to this, you always see saying, well, you can't trust Illinois politicians and they don't need more money. And the thing is that we do need more money. Right now, the state is really hurting. And I don't know what the alternative to this is. There's always this talk about, well, let's cut spending. And the truth is that spending, if you adjust for inflation and populations, state spending on general services is lower now than it was 20 years ago. The state is not like a free spending state. It's a state where if we were decided to make cuts, we're going to have to cut right into the bone and things that are going to really hurt quality of life. So the question is, if you're not going to do this, what are we going to do?
Well, is the money earmarked?
No, it's not.
No, the money is not, as you guys have both outlined, the amendment is fairly vague in terms of what, and the amendment is
right. Yeah, that's a stupid question, isn't it? It doesn't address that at all. Austin, would you be satisfied if the language either in this amendment or some other law would limit the ability of the lawmakers to impose more and more taxes and doing more spending like that? I mean, what if it did zero in on what it tries to accomplish? I'm wondering if the problem is the idea in general or just the wording of it.
Potentially that could make it more attractive, because anything would be better than what's in it right now, which, as you pointed out, that is zero. We have no idea of where the money will go. There's no restriction on what the rates would be. To Eric's point, sort of about the need for tax revenue and the trust problem, they're very closely connected. The reason I always bring up the 1989 temporary income tax hike, the 2011 income tax hike, and the 2017 income tax hike is because at what point do Illinoisans stop falling for that argument? Because every time it's promised that it's going to fix our fiscal problems, and that if we don't do it, the tax hikes are going to have to be worse and services are going to have to be cut to the bone. And yet every time it has failed. It's failed miserably. And to the point about sort of Illinois spending in general, it's a question of what we prioritize in spending and how fast our spending grows. So U of I did an awesome study looking from 1998 to 2018. State revenue that the state generates was up 47%. Healthy revenue growth over that 20-year period. but state spending went up 57%. So the problem is there are these promises that are made that the problem is going to be fixed. And in exchange for believing that promise, lawmakers here are getting more power. And we've seen time and time again, they've broken every tax promise they have ever made. So that's why I think people should vote no. Trust is a very important part of this.
Well, of course, one of the interesting things that happened was when Bruce Rauner came in and he said that he was going to reform Illinois and cut spending and root out all the problems. And then when he was asked to propose a budget that would be, possibly be satisfying to the people, and what cuts did he want to make, he realized that so much of our spending goes toward things that people really want. They want education. They want public safety. They want health care. They want these, infrastructure, the kind of things that I mentioned in my opening piece, which is that when you start thinking, okay, where are we going to cut? Suddenly, there isn't that much there to cut, and so you didn't get a proposal from Bruce Rauner that would actually right the ship, because he didn't dare to propose the cuts that would have been massively unpopular. I mean, again, maybe it's the problem that we have that taxpayers want services that they don't want to pay for, and that's kind of not as much a structural problem as it is a human nature problem. But when you have a state that we're trying to make it an attractive place to live by funding these services and so on, and then you say, well, but we're going to charge everybody the same tax rate. That ends up, in the long run. I mean, the estimate is that we have split we have widened the income gap in this state so that the people who are earning more money are earning much, much, much more money, and the people who are at the bottom end are earning just a tiny little bit more over the years. And that the tax structure we have now doesn't capture that widening income gap growth. And so if we don't capture that, we don't tax very many services, we don't tax retirement income, where are we going to get the money? I mean, this is where it comes down to, is like, okay, if you don't like this, and Lieutenant Governor Stratton said this the other day, she said, well, if you don't pass this amendment, we're going to have to probably raise taxes on everybody by 20%. Which is, because they're going to have massive bills coming due, in part because of the pandemic and in part because they already had a structural deficit.
What about that, Austin? I mean, so where does the money come from? I hear what Eric's saying. We need cash. Where are you going to get it?
So we have a great five-year budget plan at IllinoisPolicy.org. It's called Illinois Forward, and I suggest everybody check it out. It reduces the state's debt without hiking taxes and preserving core services and even growing things like education and social services that people need. Eric mentioned inequality. I think in the current age, there is a lot of discussion about science and data. The science and data around progressive taxes show no impact on inequality whatsoever. Progressive tax states have higher inequality than states with flat income taxes. The growth in inequality has been the same over time in both. They're not effective at reducing income inequality. Again, what Eric points to around the 20% tax alternative, the 20% tax hike alternative, which I would refer to as hostage taking, vote for our tax hike or we'll hike everybody's taxes, that shows that they're bereft of ideas. The only idea is to hike taxes. And the reason that it's so important to realize what Illinois politicians have done in the past is because this is the exact same. It won't fix the problem. And when the problem's not fixed, they're going to be sitting with a loaded gun that voters have given them because of these new powers. And they will go after the middle class with those new powers. They will go after retirees because, again, that they only are going after tax hikes. They're not looking at things like the fact that over the last 20 years, pension spending in Illinois has gone up 500%. Meanwhile, social services down a third. People are happy to pay taxes for things that they think are benefiting other people and are making their state better. But it's a priorities problem in Illinois. It doesn't go to things that people value.
I don't know, though, Austin. It just seems to me like people federally and locally think that the rich are getting away with it. And what's it hurt somebody in the state of Illinois if they're making $400,000 a year, if they got to pay a little more in taxes? Times is tough, right? Are they really going to pack up and move? And are so many of them going to pack up and move that we're going to miss them?
The millionaires and billionaires, I don't think is should be the focus of the discussion. The focus should be, this is going to hurt the middle class. It's going to hurt small businesses. And it's going to hurt retirees. The millionaires and billionaires can avoid pain by the cost of with the cost of a moving truck.
You're talking about this imagined future you have where the $250,000 threshold is taken down to $50,000 or something like that. I mean, most small businesses, I think it's like 85% of small businesses, the owners don't realize more than $250,000 in income every year. And those who are, the entrepreneurs who are making more than $250,000, should be able to pay on the income over that, the marginal rate, the extra marginal rate. They should be able to afford that. It's not like killing them. The rhetoric on this is that this is going to just murder small businesses. But someone who's making more than $250,000 a year is not rich. I would not call that person. It's not like Thurston Howell here. But it's someone who is doing well enough that extra bite on the of the income on the tax is not going to do what it would do if you had to raise the taxes by 20% on people who are making much less money. And you do have a situation where there was a recent study that just came out from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Their 20-year estimate is that Illinois' flat tax, if we'd had a progressive tax instead, that there's been a $4 billion transfer of wealth from Black and Hispanic taxpayers in the low and moderate income level to the affluent. Their income increases because of the system. They get more money out of this, and the people who pay the bigger price are the people who are at the lower end of the scale. So when you look at what the effective tax rate is, you know, state and local taxes all put together, the lower income people pay like almost twice as much as people in the top 1%.
Yeah, but the important part in ITEP, the institute you cite does studies on this. That's not because of the income tax. That's because of property taxes and the sales tax. So low income people in Illinois, I mentioned this in the piece, ITEP, the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy, shows that the lowest 20% of earners in Illinois pay an effective income tax rate of 1.5%. The top 20% pay around 3.7, so more than double the rate. And it's because of exemptions and deductions. We are in total agreement that Illinois' poor pay far too much in taxes. And this plan does nothing to solve that. Giving someone making $12,400 a year a $6 income tax break is pretty laughable, especially after their gas tax was hiked $100 and their vehicle, if they own a car, sticker was hiked $50. And there's just going to be more of the same, that those introductory rates, which are illusory. And you mentioned sort of like, you know, this is a doomsday scenario future. But the reality in most states with a progressive tax is that the middle class pays the highest rate. And it's because over time, the brackets creep down. You may not see it in the past 20 years, but you see it And the only state that has passed one in the last 30 years is Connecticut. And it's exactly what happened. They didn't fix their finances. They simply went back to taxpayers again and again and again. And they eventually hit up the middle class and hiked property taxes. It fixed none of the problems. And this would be the same way.
If you look around us, you see that the top rate in Minnesota is like 9.85. Iowa is 8.53. Wisconsin is 7.65. So it's not like this is this radical idea. You see states like New York and California that are doing fine with their tax rates that are progressive, and there is no serious proposal, and hasn't been for a long time, to take the federal income tax, the progressive federal income tax, and make that a flat tax. In fact, that's considered kind of a crackpot solution, because we realize that at some point you have to ask the people who make more money to shoulder a greater share of the burden. And this is what the so-called Fair Tax Amendment does. And, you know, what the legislature does with it down the line, the legislature can already raise your income taxes. We've already seen how reluctant they have been over the years. It's still a fairly low. It was kept at 3% for a long time. And that there's a lot of argument about moving it at all. If you're going to raise taxes on a big segment of the population, you're going to pay a big political price. So that's why you don't see it happening in most of these states. So I guess I'm saying that this seems like, of all the ways we have that help us get out of this problem, this isn't going to solve all of our problems, but of all the ways we have, this is the one that strikes me as the one that does the least damage. And that's
Eric, you're not worried though. Eric, you're not worried what Austin keeps saying though. He doesn't talk about the tax as much as he talks about the power. You're not worried that they're just going to layer on all kinds of crap over and over and over again?
They have the power to raise income tax rates right now. There's been huge fights about it over the years. It went up, remember, then it came down, then it went back up again. So it's not like they're
just mentioned vehicle stickers and transfers and things like that.
Well, one of the reasons is because the taxes we're getting from income taxes are not enough to cover these services. So that's in some ways that we say that the poor people having to pay these extra taxes, nothing stops them from raising those taxes either. I mean, so what you end up doing is if you can have a more robust system, a system where the burden is spread out more, maybe you don't have to raise your gas tax as much, or maybe you don't have to raise your fishing license fee. Or all the different the cell phone taxes and all the other ways that taxes that hit the rich and poor the same. And so a whole bunch of our tax system right now is what we call regressive. And you pay the same sales tax if you're poor or if you're J.B. Pritzker or Ken Griffin. So you know all these taxes are in the system right now. Almost, you know, every single one of them except the income tax is regressive. So that when you make this income tax progressive, you at least adjust for some of that. And again, my whole argument here is that this is the least painful way to do the painful job of taxation to fund government.
Well, I think it's just misleading to say that it's only going to hit the rich. The point about the power I mentioned, you know, the horror movie scenario. You want everybody in the pack to stay together because as soon as someone wanders off into the woods, they get whacked. It would be the exact same thing in Illinois with different income tax rates and different types of income. And Eric mentioned previous tax hikes. The 2017 income tax hike is a great example of this. It was so politically unpopular. There was a record exodus of politicians after that went into effect because there was a mass voter backlash. This makes tax hikes easier because you can avoid the mass voter backlash. You go one segment at a time. Retirement tax, fantastic example of this. It's why in every single progressive tax state taxes retirement income. And in Illinois, if you wanted to go after that retirement income today, you'd have to tax it at the same rate as everybody else, 4.95%. If this goes into effect, if this amendment goes into effect that allows different income tax rates on different income groups, you could start with simply a penny tax on retirement income. Let's just cut fixed incomes for seniors by a penny on every dollar that they earn. And then, of course, the ball gets rolling and it goes higher and higher and higher. I think it's disingenuous when proponents say this doesn't make it easier to hike taxes on everyone, because if it didn't, I mean, why do we need the amendment in the first place? It's all about making it easier to hike taxes in Illinois.
Because you maybe just need the extra $3 billion that the proposed new structure would give you. I mean, to get to taxing retirement income, we are one of only three states that doesn't tax retirement income. And this is considered such a third rail issue that politicians can't touch it. It makes no sense to me not to tax retirement income above a certain level. If you could have a progressive tax, if retirement income, we all know this from some of these pensions that like school superintendents get are grotesque and that they don't pay taxes on that. State income taxes on that is appalling. And it's all and also the way we don't tax services the way most states do. The economy has changed over the last 25 years, and it's much more service-oriented economy. Illinois taxes fewer services than anyone else. So when you have a situation like that, you're relying more on property taxes, which is why our property taxes are so high, and you're relying more on state taxes. So I don't understand income taxes, and I'm not sure why the argument is so frightening that we would tax certain upper level retirement incomes. Is that such an appalling idea?
The problem is it creeps down, and the other problem is that proponents aren't being as honest as you are about what the next move is. So State Treasurer Frerichs said in the summer, you know, this would make it clear. Dan Biss said in the gubernatorial debates in 2018 that it would, and now you have fair tax people running ads saying, you know, this is not a retirement tax. And they vehemently deny that that's any part of this. And it's a big part of it.
Well, because you could tax, say, someone whose retirement income is more than $250,000. You could
or you could charge a different rate on all of it, which
you could do that now.
Like I was saying, no, you couldn't, because it requires we have a flat tax that treats all income the same. You couldn't charge a different rate for retirement income versus someone who's working. You would have to charge at the full rate. And this is the point I'm making about political backlash. It's a lot more difficult to take 5% of retirees' money than it is to take 0.5% or 1%. And this would allow that.
You can the tax code now allows for certain exemptions, right? And certain below a certain threshold.
But it doesn't allow for progressive rates, and it doesn't allow for taxing different income broadly at different rates. This is why Frerich said you need a graduated tax in order to make it clear you can tax retirement income.
But Eric's okay with that, right, Eric? Like, if this means that they're going to tax our retirement income, you think that may be a necessary evil, and nothing in here sets the limit or the level at which that would be, right?
It would certainly have to be something that would be politically palatable. And it would have to, you know, have to realize that seniors tend to vote in great numbers. So you're going to have to be careful about the way and how you raise those rates. But if you were to say, create a system in which you could tax retirement income over $100,000, over $200,000, over $250,000 a year, that certainly doesn't seem at all unreasonable to me, given that Illinois is one of three states that doesn't do that.
Yeah, but I want to just point something else out to you guys. It says here on the ballot, it gives the state the ability to impose higher tax rates on those with higher income levels and lower income tax rates on those with middle or lower income levels. Who doesn't want that? I mean,
Austin Berg does not want that.
Yeah, because that summary language was approved on a party line vote. That's a highly, highly biased language, because if you look at the text of the actual amendment, it's about different incomes at different rates. There's nothing in there that says it has to be progressive, that it has to be higher incomes at higher rates and lower incomes at lower rates. There was one question.
It says that here on the thing.
That's the politicized language around the summary of what the actual amendment does.
But the rate would be higher on people with higher incomes, the same way it is at the federal system, than it would be on people with middle or lower, right, Austin? It's a graduated system.
That's not the constitutional amendment that we're voting on. Those are statutory rates that were passed by Springfield, and they promise that they're going to stay the same. It's two separate issues.
I know, but this thing says that the people with more income will pay a higher rate, right?
I think what Austin's saying is that the amendment and the language on the ballot are at odds, or at least they're different, so that one could theoretically say, well, we're going to raise taxes. We're going to raise taxes on if the amendment passes. You can make any bracket you want. You say, well, you know, if you make more than $250,000 a year, you have no taxes, because we want to encourage millionaires to come here. But if you make less than that, we're going to charge you more. Realistically, of course, that's not going to happen. But and I would also amplify any objection that anyone would ever want to raise to the loaded and tendentious language on the ballot proposals that they have. Those need to be far more neutral than they are.
Yeah, and I think that gets at the trustworthiness issue. I wanted to go back to the small business issue, because I actually think that's really important. And I don't think we should be dismissing the fact that 100,000 small businesses would see higher tax bills. We want more businesses throwing off $250,000 in profit or more. Those are the job creators of our state. It's a majority of our new jobs come from small businesses and small employers. And none other than former President Barack Obama said during his tenure, you don't hike taxes in a recession. And it's because it doesn't make economic sense. When we have 700,000 Illinoisans out of work, you don't hike taxes on the people who are supposed to be getting those people back to work. That hurts low-income Illinoisans. It hurts middle-class Illinoisans. It doesn't hurt millionaires and billionaires. They can afford to leave the state and avoid the tax altogether. It does hurt the people looking for work in Illinois who aren't able to find it because small businesses don't want to invest here. That's who it hurts.
This is pass-through income, right? We're talking about that.
That's right.
The money that the business make goes through that person or that family. it's counted as income, but it's not like all of these people are getting $250,000 paychecks from some other employer, right?
It's very important to recognize like the lean years that businesses have to go through. Think about if you were owned a chain of 10 restaurants, how much you would have liked to have made that money and banked it, you know, a couple of years ago for a rainy day, because now your income's wiped out. Punishing that income and punishing kind of reinvestment in your business is a bad idea. And it raises taxes on pass-through businesses. It also raises taxes on, you know, your regular corporate
businesses. If you're reinvesting money in your business, that's not tax. If you're taking the money and you're not keeping it as income, but you're investing in your business, you can write it off like Donald Trump writes off his haircuts, right? I mean, my understanding from the Center on Tax and Budget Priorities is that only about 15% of these small businesses earn more than $250,000 a year. And you got to remember that the rate doesn't kick in on all that $250,000. It only kicks in on the money, the extra money on top of the $250,000. So I'm not exactly sure why this is so punitive. Why we would signal out someone like a lawyer making more than that money. Why is the lawyer making more than $250,000 entitled to less protection than someone who runs a 20-person tool and die manufacturing?
I don't know, Eric, but your newspaper runs a lot of stories about people who are leaving Illinois for a variety of reasons. And they call my show, and one of the things they cite are the taxes. And maybe it's not the income taxes all of the time, but it's the totality of taxes and another layer of taxes, graduated taxes, sure doesn't seem to me to be welcoming or any way of keeping people here.
Well, what I brought up toward the end of my opening remarks was that one of the things we spend tax money on are these services and infrastructure and education, the kind of things that make the quality of life attractive to people here. And if we just cut, and I don't know what's in Austin's 5-year plan, but if we just cut and, you know, if we, you know, hollow out state government, shrink it down to its smallest level, you can, it's like it turns into a race to the bottom. And I'm not sure that makes Illinois a more attractive place for people to live, to start a business, to raise a family, which is what you want is you want to create a state where people want to live, like New York and California, where people are you know, love to live there. So I'm not sure why we think that cutting taxes and cutting spending, if it's on vital services, is the answer.
I don't know. I lived in Minnesota for a long time, where the income tax rate, the top bracket, is around 10%. And the state, it's amazing, but they have a budget surplus. They're trying to figure out how to spend their extra billions of dollars. And it's a lovely state and everybody lives near a park. And it seems to me like the quality of life is very good there. They're getting a lot of bang for their buck and they have extra bucks. People would prefer the rate be lower, but it doesn't seem to be hurting people that much, Austin.
Illinois has the worst of both worlds. And that's what I was saying about the crowd out of these massive debt costs. So social services have been hollowed out in Illinois. And spending in real terms on them is down a third over the last 20 years. As I said, spending on pensions is up 500%. And this tax only makes that problem worse. We are continuing to try to tax our way out of a problem that every economist and every expert says is not solvable by higher taxes. And to the point about out-migration, we only need to listen to New York Governor Cuomo, who shouted to the heavens, tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. God forbid the rich leave, because the rich were leaving his state in droves. And especially with the federal tax changes on the state and local tax deduction, you see people who are making higher incomes, they feel the weight of their state and local taxes more than at any other point in the last 100 years. And it is driving migration decisions. And who does that burden fall on when they leave? It falls on the middle class, where the bulk of the income is. It falls on retirees, and that's exactly who they would go after next.
So
with these new powers.
So why isn't every rich person in the country living in Florida then? Florida has no state income tax.
Well, there's lots of reasons that people move, but it's decisions on the margin. And when you lose every dollar that you lose out of that bracket, because you're losing battles with other states, just as New York experienced, is something made up somewhere down the income tax bracket. So the people most likely to leave in Illinois on a per capita basis already are people making over $150,000. A lot of it has to do with taxes. A lot of it has to do with job opportunities. And again, the job opportunities is a huge factor in why people move. And Illinois' punishingly high taxes, which this would not change, is a huge factor in why we can't create jobs here, why we can't create good paying jobs in Illinois. Well, so it would worsen the out-migration problem in that way, too.
Give us one of those 5 points or methods that you're going to solve some of these problems without raising taxes, Austin.
The biggest point is to tie to make the pension system sustainable for young retirees, current young workers, current retirees, and soon to be retirees and taxpayers. We have what's called the Hold Harmless Pension Amendment. So every current pensioner, no one would see a cut in their pension check. But instead of having a 3% compounding automatic raise year after year after year, you would actually tie that to inflation, as lots of other states do. For example, just Eric was mentioning our neighbors in Wisconsin, they tie the cost of living adjustment to how well the fund does. So there's real skin in the game from everybody, from taxpayers, retirees, public sector workers, and they have the best funded pension plans in the country. So a huge part of getting Illinois on the right track, and really the only way out of this spiral of high taxes and debt, is to have a real compromise solution on pensions. That's really huge. And there is absolutely no talk of that from the Pritzker administration. The only talk is pass our tax hike or we'll hike taxes on all of you.
When you have, you know, the 3% COLA in Illinois was a Republican idea, and it was seen at the time as a great deal for taxpayers because the rate of inflation was much higher. It turned out to be a bad idea. But at the time, people thought it was a smart move because the rate of inflation, if you tied it to inflation, inflation back then was it greater than 3%. So what looks like a bad deal now looked like a good deal then. So if we were to change that to tie it to inflation, we might end up with a situation where we have like 5-6% inflation and we'd have the same kind of problem. We do have a new tier two pension system, which is not particularly generous. And that's being phased in. I'm not going to sit here and defend the entire pension system in Illinois. I think I agree with Austin that it has been too generous and the underfunding of it has been criminal. But I'm not sure that first of all, there's going to be a lot of legal hurdles involved in changing that. And you'd have to get a constitutional amendment going to do that. I wouldn't mind giving people the right to vote on that. I wouldn't mind giving people the right to vote on gerrymandering amendments. I think that's the Democrats should allow that. But we're talking really like down the line kind of changes here. I don't know that you can do this, that you can get Illinois back on any kind of solid footing at all without having more tax revenue coming in, especially under the situation of the pandemic. So, that's really where I am on this, which is, nobody likes taxes. Nobody likes to raise taxes. But the question is, who's going to pay and how are we going to do that? So, and my answer is that, you ask the wealthy people to shoulder a little bit more of the burden because they're not going to feel it the same way that lower income people feel it.
What's the biggest hurdle, Eric, from your standpoint? I'll ask you the same question, Austin, but I mean, if I'm to be persuaded, what do you think the biggest hurdle is that you've got to get me to get over to get to your side?
Well, first of all, a big hurdle is that it's got to get 60% approval from the voters, which is a landslide, right? I mean, in modern terms, that's a landslide. So I don't have a lot of hope that this is going to pass, despite all the money being poured into it. And despite the polls that show that people react generally favorably to the idea of taxing the rich more than the middle and lower income people.
You don't think this is not going to pass, huh?
I don't think it's going to get 60% of the vote, but we'll see. That's a big threshold. It's supposed to be to amend the Constitution. You want it to be. Another hurdle is Mike Madigan and what he stands for people, which is he stands for exactly what Austin has referred to in this conversation already several times, which is Illinois politicians who have not been responsible over the last three decades, Illinois politicians who have not been trustworthy over the last three decades.
Right.
When you have that distrust in government, every time I've written about this, and I've written 4 or 5 columns on it, I'm inundated by letters from people who cite Mike Madigan in particular and Illinois Democrats in general as being the reason why even people who identify themselves as moderate Democrats and even liberal Democrats say, I'm not going to give them another dime if I can help it, even if it's not my money, which is an interesting thing. It's like someone who's making, you know, 100 grand or 75 grand says, I'm not going to let them tax somebody who makes more than 250 grand because I don't trust those bastards. And, you know, I mean, that, so they, that argument, I get that all the time, I admit that it's a difficult hurdle to overcome, which is like, you don't trust these people even with the money, even if they never hike the rates again, as everyone says that they will, even if they don't hike those rates, you still don't want them to get any more money. So that's why I asked the question.
That's what I thought you would get to. I'm glad you did. I think it's a trust issue besides the 60% threshold. Do you trust these people to do right, to be honest, to be fair, to be smart? Austin, same question to you. What is the biggest hurdle for you to get me to join your side?
The emotionally compelling argument that you should tax the rich more. The problem is obviously, as I've tried to outline here, is that that's a bait and switch. They get you to buy in, just like your a Comcast bill. They get you with the introductory rates, and then, you know, 3 months later, you've got HBO versions of HBO you didn't know existed. So I think, and the same thing would happen in Illinois when it comes to people's tax burden. But yeah, I do think the branding of it as a fair tax, which I try to explain to people, is nowhere in the amendment. There's nothing in the amendment that says the rich have to pay more. That's that kind of misleading advertising to me is the biggest hurdle.
Yeah, I worry for your side that the fact that it's called a fair tax and that I read that sentence in the middle of it, you know, who wouldn't be against that, is going to be a problem for you. Maybe 60% will save you, but like I said, who doesn't want to have less income for the taxes for the lower and the middle and more for the rich, right?
And briefly on the 60% threshold, so that depends a lot on how many people don't vote on the question, but say vote for president. And based on the last three constitutional amendments, it's not unlikely that you only a 50% threshold would apply. So more than half of people voting on the question. So I really, really think this is going to be neck and neck. It will be down to every single last vote. And I've been telling everyone who listened, if you can be totally checked out on the presidential election, you can hate both candidates, you could not know who your school board members are, you couldn't, you know, your state reps, your state senators. This is such an important question. We haven't had a real tax hike vote in Illinois for 50 years, and every vote's really going to count on this one.
I just want to point out, J.B. Pritzker campaigned on this issue, and he won decisively in the last election, but he only won 54% of the vote. It was considered to be butt-kicking, and that was just with 54% of the vote. So, I think to get over that 60% threshold is going to be a real challenge, even for Democrats in Illinois. So,
well, I think you guys both make compelling arguments. I sure appreciate your time. Eric, did Austin persuade you, or Austin, have you changed your mind based on Eric's sterling performance here?
Fortunately not. I do look forward to the results of the drug test. Again, mine is on your patio, John.
And you can see, just because you peed in the plants on his patio doesn't mean drug test. And you can see that I have an earpiece in here, which I'm being fed information from the hard left on this. Now, I mean, I certainly respect and understand Austin's arguments. I hear him all the time with my friends on the editorial board. I think that the fear that they have that this is going to make things worse is a genuine fear, because most of the people, Austin, I'm assuming, does not make more than $250,000 a year. I don't. Nope. My friends on the editorial page don't. It's not about us. It's about what we think is going to be best for Illinois. And I think there's a real honest difference of opinion on this. And I'm really glad to hash it out with someone as smart as Austin. So,
ditto to Eric. This has been great.
Well, it's been very helpful to me. And, you know, like I said, I have my ballot right here. You can hear the hard stock of the ballot that was mailed to me. And based on what the two of you have said, I think I'm going to vote for the Green Party candidate or the American Solidarity. I don't know. I'll have to figure out.
I think you can write in Kanye, can't you?
I'm voting for Kanye. Guys, we will record another podcast tomorrow, Thursday. That'll be our normal Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll reference this. If you've just found this podcast because of what you read about in the Chicago Tribune, know that these two smart guys have some very good company every Thursday when we post a podcast called The Mincing Rascals. We kick around all sorts of issues on that one, and we will talk about the presidential debate there. Fellas, thanks for your time. Well done.
Great to see you.
Thanks, guys.
See you guys tomorrow.